But it's obvious why we have a book called Genesis. Genesis means beginning. Very good. All right. Exodus means what? That's too easy. Leviticus means what? The Levites. I was trying to give you a clue. Okay. Now we're ready to go to the next book. They counted how many people there were. That's where the book gets its name. And in the first and two chapters of the book of Numbers, there is a census that is taken, a numbering of the people. Now, when you get to the end of the book, put 40 years between the two censuses. We take a census every 10 years. On this occasion, they waited 40 years and took a second census. And there's a reason for all of this that is tied to what happens in that 40-year period. We'll talk more about that second numbering a little bit later. But you and I need to understand when all of this happened. If you've got their numbers cards, in fact, I believe there are two of them. It's called Numbers through the Spying of the Land. And the very first question there, that's on the prophet card. It says, Numbers tells about what? The numbering of the people. Where did that happen? The priest card says, what happened at Mount Sinai? There are four things that happened at Mount Sinai. What are they?
Moses went up on the mountain.
The what? Moses went up the mountain and got the Ten Commandments. Second thing, what happened at Mount Sinai? Did you say golden calf? I hope you did. The golden calf. They worshiped the golden calf. The third thing that happened there was they built the tabernacle. We spent quite a bit of time in the book of Leviticus trying to describe what that tent looked like. And the fourth thing that happened is the book of Numbers. They counted to see how many individuals left the land of Egypt. Now, who do they count? They only counted the men who were able to go to war, who were above 20 years of age. And so you teens are no account. I want you to understand that. The Bible shows the teens don't count at all. I hope you understand I'm being somewhat facetious when I say that, at least about most of you. But you and I need to understand that you had to be above 20. Now here's the question. How many people were there when they counted the people? This is how big their army was. They were soldiers. 603,550. You got it, Diane? That's great. 603,550. It's amazing what people do with the book of Numbers. There are individuals who do not believe the Bible. Even in denominational seminary, I've got one of the books that was used as a textbook in a denominational seminary and said, you cannot provide that much manna for all those people. The number is wrong. It should be 6,000 people. And so they got the right number to start with. But here, if you went to a denominational seminary, they'd say, well, there were only 6,000 of them. No, 603,000 people. Think about how massive that is. Now, Palm Beach County's got more than that in. I think, we're 1.2 million or 1.4 million like that. But you just stop and think about 600,000 soldiers. And so you had that number, and that number has some importance. Who was not counted? Now, on the card, there's some of the answers, but it's obvious. Who did they not count? They did not count the teens. Who did they not count? They didn't count the women. They didn't count the children. They did not count the infirmed. And they did not count the Levites. The Levites are in the book of Numbers about to take an unbelievably important step in the mind of God. And so they were not required to be a part of the army of Israel that went out to war. They were not required to do that. And so you've got all of those that were not counted. The the situation happens at Mount Sinai. And this census is important. It had been God's plan at Mount Sinai to make the firstborn to be the priest. In every family, the firstborn was going to be the priest. In fact, in the land of Egypt, with the blood of the lamb, he purchased the firstborn. They were his. He spared their life. They were alive because of him. He purchased them with the blood of the lamb on the doorpost and across the top of the door. They belonged to him. Isn't it interesting that the Bible, one of the words used to describe the church, we are the church of the firstborn. Not Jesus as the firstborn, though he is also called the firstborn, but the word is plural. How were we redeemed? We are an assembly, a church of people who have been purchased by the blood of the Lamb. And that's what happened down in the land of Egypt. He purchased the firstborn. Guess what happened? Firstborn children may not always be the best children. Guess who worshiped the golden calf so much that God says, you have forfeited your right to be a priest. You would have had the right to come into that tabernacle. You would have had the right as firstborn to offer the sacrifices that would bring about forgiveness for the sins of all of the people. You forfeited that at Mount Sinai. When Moses came off the mountain, Moses took a position and he said, who stands with me? And guess which tribe came and stood with Moses? The tribe of Levi. And right there, God made the decision, the Levites are going to be my priest. Well, you've got a problem. You've got to count how many Levites there are. Because you're going to have to trade one Levite for one firstborn. And so when they counted the number of the Levites and they counted those who were from a month old and upward, you found out that there was a disparity between the number of Levites and the number of the firstborn. You remember we've talked about that firstborn donkey. I've talked to young people to you about how if they were going to keep that donkey, they could buy it from God. But if you chose not to buy that donkey, you broke his neck. You put your foot on the neck of that donkey and you broke that donkey's neck. When they counted the Levites, there were over 200 more firstborn than there were Levites. And so the Bible decides how they traded them one for one, one for one. And would you believe what they did was they took all of those firstborn and cracked their neck and let them lie dying on the ground? I hope you wouldn't believe that. That's not what happened. They paid money into the treasury of God, coins, to redeem those firstborn so they would not have to be put to death and therefore they would be allowed to live. You were not redeemed, New Testament says, with silver or gold. That's a reflection to that thing that happens right here in the Old Testament. Chosen as priests instead of the Levites. That's on the priest card. And then, what were the work that the Levites did? Well, the question on the card is, who are the movers of the tabernacle? They are the descendants of Korah, Gershom, and Merari. And each of them had their part of that tabernacle that they were to carry. Not every Levite could carry the Ark of the Covenant. And so Aaron had these three sons and their descendants, and they became the ones who were in charge of taking care of that tabernacle. By the way, you are a priest. We are a kingdom of priests. And priestly duties is to take care of the tabernacle. You young people need to take care of each other. Those who are older need to take care of each other. And in an interactive way, all of us need to take care of each other. But young people, if you see some teen that's having some problem, you're a priest. And just as that priest had the responsibility, some of them to take the Ark of the Covenant, some to take the tents, to take the cloth that was over the top of the tents, the skins of animals that were over the top of the tent, the tabernacle, and some of them carried the furnishings that were in the tabernacle. As priests, we have a responsibility to take care of the tabernacle. Who's the tabernacle? That's us. If a brother be overtaken in a fault, you who are spiritual, restore such a one. This story of the Old Testament is not just a story of just happenstance of things that were there. The Old Testament was a shadow of those things that were to come. Look at this next question. The test for a woman suspected of adultery. If you saw the action, you were to be put to death. Remember, they brought the woman to Jesus and said she was caught in the very act, and Moses says she ought to die. What do you say? It's rather interesting. If they caught the woman, why didn't they catch the man? Why did they only bring the woman? But it was possible that a man might suspect that his wife had been unfaithful to him, for whatever reason, and she was to be brought to the priest. And this is on the king card. She was brought to the priest, and she was to drink some of the bitter water. And when she drank the bitter water, if she were innocent, nothing would happen. If she were guilty of it, there would come an affliction in her body that would bring about her death. That is just an amazing incident that is there. And I've got more questions about it than I've got answers. But doesn't that show how sacred the marriage vow is? And doesn't that show the importance of faithfulness to each other? And husbands, you need never to do anything at all that would ever make your wife suspicious of you and some other woman. And wives, you never need to do anything that all would make your husband be suspicious that you've been unfaithful to your husband. And the evidence of the importance of that is this very woman that we read about in the book of Numbers. There's only about 6 or 8 verses to describe it, but that's one of the things that are there. Numbers chapter 6 talks about a Nazarite. Jesus was not a Nazarite. Jesus was a Nazarene. And he was a Nazarene because he lived in Nazareth. And there's an Old Testament prophecy that said he shall be a Nazarene. And Jesus had to grow up in Nazareth. But the Nazarite vow could be taken by individuals, and there were those who took that vow, and they were not allowed to drink any wine at all. They were not allowed to even eat the grapes where there is wine. They were not allowed to cut their hair. and they were not allowed to touch those things that were dead. A Nazarite vow was a vow of consecration to God. And you and I perhaps sometimes need to think about renewing our devotion to God. There are times whenever we just need to think, you know, I'm not where I used to be. And the Jew that wanted to could take the Nazarite vow. Evidently, Samson's mother and father took that for Samson. God says, don't let him drink and don't let him eat grapes. And so it could be made for about a parent. And there are other characters that are in the Old Testament that was there. And when the Nazarite had completed his vow, he was to shave his head to show that the vow had been completed. And so it was just a time where an individual made a vow to God, I'm going to serve God. Sometimes there are times in our lives that we need to think soberly about that. We tend to think it in the waiting room of the hospitals. We tend to think it whenever the doctor says, that's all I can do. And we began to try to bargain with God and said, God, if you let him live, if you'll get me out of this situation, I promise you, here's what I'll do. That's somewhat like the Nazarite vow. There's not the physical manifestation of it. But you and I need to understand that we don't need to make vows to God just because there's some adversity. Ecclesiastes says, When thou makest a vow to God, defer not to pay it. And so those in the Old Testament could make a vow to God about what they were going to do for God, and he says, and don't you ever not pay that vow. You and I need to think that there are life circumstances that helps us to make vows to God. What are you going to do with your life, young people? One of these days you'll be 80 years of age. You're going to look back. What do you want your life to look like? There are decisions that you're making right now at this point in your life that will impact you the rest of your life. And there are decisions that we make in marriage. Marriage is a vow made in the presence of God and all of these witnesses, till death do us part. And when the vow involves God, make sure that you pay that vow. And so God made provision for individuals in the Old Testament who wanted to spend perhaps all of their lives or a part of their lives in a holy, consecrated way to God, to make a vow to God. And I urge you in your life when circumstances develop to look at your life and where your life is going and say, I'm going to serve God better. And that's a part of that Nazarite vow that was there. Go back to the matter of the Levites. To be a Levite, you had to be between the age of 25 to 50. If you're over 50, you could not be a Levite. Under 25, you could not be a Levite priest serving in the tabernacles. And there is that occasion in the wilderness, and the book of Numbers is just one event after another after another. The Bible says that they complained about not having enough food. They detested the manna that they had. And they complained to God, and so God said, okay, I'm going to send quails to you. And they sent quails to them, were they one cubit large? I didn't look the text up. But over the entire camp, they ate so many quails. As I said, when I was a younger preacher, until it ran out their ears. That's what my mother used to say. You've eaten so much, you're going to run out your ears. And I was up preaching, and I knew that that's what the story was. And I remember as a young preacher said, they ate it until it ran out their ears. No, they ate quails until it ran out their nostrils. You ever vomit? And it comes out in your nostrils? Sometimes we ask God to give us some things, and when God gives us to us, we don't know how to appreciate it. And sometimes God gives us what we ask just so that we might learn the lesson that we ought not to murmur like these individuals did. Well, let's talk about the religious leaders in the book of Numbers. There's Moses, and there is Aaron, and there's another child that Amram and Jochebed had. They had three children, two boys and a girl. Anybody remember Moses' sister's name? Miriam. And guess what? In the book of Numbers, she complained about the woman that Moses had married. Do sisters ever do that? Do family members ever complain about who you've married and everything? She didn't like, for some reason, she didn't like the woman that Moses had married, and she came and complained against Moses. Miriam, that's none of your business. You're not a part of this marriage. She complained against Moses. You know what God did? He struck her with leprosy because she murmured. You know what they did in the wilderness? For 40 years, they murmured. He brought us out into the wilderness. And then the book of Leviticus, or pardon me, the book of Hebrews, it says, 10 times you've tempted me there in this wilderness. And so here Miriam is, she's got nothing better to do than complain about who Moses had married, and God struck her with leprosy. You know what leprosy is? When I was in India, it's not just a happenstance thing. If you get leprosy, it's a disease that affects the body parts, and your skin begins to rot and decay. Underneath that skin, you've got ligaments, and tied to that are the bones. And leprosy begins to eat those appendages. And when I was in India, a beggar would come and hold out his hand, and he would have no fingers whatsoever. Ringing in my heart is this Hindu word, bakshai. Bakshai. Do you know if you don't have fingers, you can't make a living? Try to think of some occupation if you don't have fingers that you can make a living at. Before I went to India, the elder says, Dan, when you go into the marketplace, don't ever give any money to the beggars. The word will get out, and the very next time you come in the marketplace, there'll be 100 people following you around. When I went in the marketplace the first couple of times, going down to buy food, supplies, and everything, sure enough, there were these individuals that were coming up saying, bakshai, bakshai. And I, at the advice of the elders, would not give them anything. But when a fingerless hand said, bakshai, I could not help but reach into my pocket, and the coins over there were practically worthless, and give him a coin that he was so appreciative of. It doesn't just stop with the fingers. It could affect any part of your body. And the Bible talks about sin being like leprosy. You stop and think about it. Sin attacks us like leprosy attacks the body. And the word that we use to grab everybody's attention nowadays in America is cancer. Maybe there's a new word that's being developed called COVID-19, you know, but it's life-threatening. And that's exactly what cancer is. And that's exactly what sin is in relationship to these things. The cards on that numbers card ask the question about what happened when they got ready to spy out the land. We've got just a few minutes to talk about the part of the story that you know. They left Mount Sinai. They'd been there for a year. They travel up to the southern edge of the promised land to a place called Kadesh Barnea. And they send out 12 spies. I think it is interesting to note that it was not God who told them to send the spies out. They decided on their own they would send the spies out. And the spies went out, 12 of them, one from each of the 12 tribes, spied out the land and came back and says, "This land indeed flows with milk and honey. But there are walled cities that are there." Numbers chapter 1 says, "The walled cities reach all the way up to heaven." That may help you understand the Tower of Babel they wanted to breach, they wanted to build, was that which reached up to the heavens. Not where God is, not Jack and the Beanstalk, but not that at all. But they said, "We stand, we look at those walls, there's no way we can take that city. And there are giants in the land, and we look like grasshoppers to them, and when we look at ourselves, that's how we see ourselves." They brought back one cluster of grape that was so large they had to put it on a pole, and two grown men had to carry one bunch of grapes out of the promised land. It was a land that flowed with milk and honey. And the Bible describes of how God became so angry at them that when they believed the report of the unfaithful spies, that he says, "As a result of not believing me, because you have disobeyed me, you've got to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. And every one of you 603,550 will die. You'll perish in the wilderness, except two." Two of the spies, they sent out 12. Two of the spies came back and says, "God will help us take the land. Let's go up right now. Let's get started." You know the names of one of them. Joshua and Caleb was the other one. And so at the end of the book of Numbers, they count again how many people there were. This time there were 601,770. Same size nation, but every person had died in that wilderness. My daughter teaches at Sunday school up in Tennessee, and she says they came to that edge of the promised land, and the Lord said, "Because you've disobeyed me, you're going to have to go and stay in the wilderness for the next 40 years. And a child in her Sunday school class said, "Wow, that's some time out." It's funny how we use words and people don't understand them. But that is a time out. It was a time for all of them to die. You've got to understand the seriousness of sin. And you'll see that as we study the book of Numbers. We've got another card, and next week we'll talk about some of these other events that happened in the wilderness. You are dismissed from this class.